From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Half of Americans may not know it, but their photos are in face recognition databases used by law enforcement, according to an investigation by a think tank at Georgetown Law. Police can compare millions of mugshots, driver's license, and ID photos against images of unknown suspects. This technology is less accurate in identifying African American, younger, and female faces. And because African Americans are more likely to be arrested, they are overrepresented in the databases. We talked to David Gray, law professor at the University of Maryland, who says this face recognition technology raises questions about our right to privacy.
So it certainly seems that the Fourth Amendment would have something to say about facial recognition, because after all, that's law enforcement officers searching a database in order to find somebody.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record.
Historically, if the police have wanted to know who you were, they had to stop you and ask you for your name or your ID. Face recognition technology lets the police identify you from far away and in secret without ever talking to you.
That's Alvaro Bedoya, executive director of the Center on Privacy and Technology at Georgetown Law. Last week, the center released a report titled "The Perpetual Lineup: Unregulated Police Face Recognition in America." It's a constant lineup, researchers said, because one out of four police departments in the U.S. has the option of running face recognition scans, and the databases used include the faces of one of every two people in America, most of whom never committed a crime and don't know they're in a law enforcement database. No states have passed laws comprehensively regulating the use of this technology. Bedoya again.
This is not business as usual. Law enforcement has never created a national biometric database that is populated primarily by law-abiding people.
In Maryland, police began running face recognition searches on mugshots in 2011. A few years later, driver's license photos were added to the mix. Today, the local repository that Maryland law enforcement can search includes more than 10 million photos. Police may also request searches of the FBI's mugshot database of 25 million photos. What are the legal implications of this new technology? How does it connect with other surveillance technologies? How can the power of facial recognition be harnessed for law enforcement without trampling on civil liberties? David Gray is a professor of law at the Francis King Carey School of Law at the University of Maryland. He teaches courses on criminal law, criminal procedure, evidence, and jurisprudence. His forthcoming book is titled "The Fourth Amendment in an Age of Surveillance." Welcome to On the Record.
Thank you for having me.
Perhaps I should start by asking you to remind us what the Fourth Amendment stands for.
So the Fourth Amendment is the part of the Bill of Rights that protects against unreasonable searches and seizures, and it guarantees the right of the people to be secure against unreasonable searches and seizures in their persons, homes, papers, and effects. And then it also goes on to describe the requirements that must be met in order for government agents to conduct searches pursuant to warrants, including requirements that the warrants be secured by oath or affirmation, that they particularly describe the places to be searched and the things or persons to be seized. And so it certainly seems that the Fourth Amendment would have something to say about facial recognition, because after all, that's law enforcement officers searching a database in order to find somebody. And it certainly seems like the Fourth Amendment ought to have something to say about whether searching those databases in general or in any particular case is reasonable. But due to a very peculiar definition of search that has been adopted by the Supreme Court after a case called United States versus Katz in 1967, the use of facial recognition software and facial recognition technologies probably is not regulated by the Fourth Amendment at all. In that Katz case, the court decided to define search according to whether law enforcement or government activities intruded upon reasonable expectations of privacy. And building on that definition, the court has found that reasonable expectations of privacy are not violated if government agents get access to information from a third party. And so, for example, if you every time you write a check or you use your credit card, you share financial information with your bank or your credit card company. And the court has said that if government agents get access to that information, the Constitution has nothing to say about it, essentially because you've given up your reasonable expectations of privacy in that information by sharing it with a third party. And so all of the pictures that are in these governmental databases have been shared with third parties, some of them by force in terms of mugshots, some of them by choice, photos that are taken for IDs, state IDs or licenses or IDs at your workplace. But at any rate, all of these photos have been shared with third parties. And so the Fourth Amendment, the current doctrine at least, says that there's no Fourth Amendment search that occurs if government agents look at those pictures because you've shared those pictures with third parties. That's the current state of the Fourth Amendment with these facial recognition databases.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast speaking with David Gray. He's a professor at the University of Maryland School of Law and an expert on criminal law, privacy, and surveillance. We're talking about facial recognition software used by police. So I thought that the issue would be how much privacy can anyone claim over his face? I mean, you don't have an expectation of privacy walking down the street or attending a protest. I mean, this tool is not uncovering something that is private. It's your face. It's hanging out there. But that's not really the issue. You're saying it's not that my face is public. It's that I may have willingly shared the right to look at it with someone.
So what you're talking about is another Fourth Amendment doctrine that's been built on that peculiar definition of search that was proposed in Katz called the public observation doctrine. And so you're exactly right. Anything that you expose to public view is not protected by reasonable expectations of privacy. And so if government agents gather anything you expose to public view, that is not a search for Fourth Amendment purposes. If government agents track your movements over public streets, that at least right now is not a Fourth Amendment search. And certainly a law enforcement officer standing on a street corner watching people go by is not a search. So that suggests that a different use of this facial recognition software that is mentioned in the report, but isn't widely deployed quite yet, also probably wouldn't be subject to Fourth Amendment review, and that is the linking of facial recognition software to surveillance cameras. So there are already a few jurisdictions, New York, for example, Chicago, that have a few systems that are that can use surveillance cameras and then scan the images that are gathered by those surveillance cameras against these facial recognition databases and essentially and pretty much in real time document who is passing that surveillance camera. And that starts to feel like the kind of surveillance state that is documented in movies like Minority Report or books like 1984, the kind of surveillance state that many of us would describe as dystopian. But that technology is coming, and I think one of the principal concerns of this Georgetown report is there doesn't seem to be any constitutional or legislative restraint on the development and deployment of that kind of a system. Because, again, the Fourth Amendment has nothing to say about it. It's not a search because it's just documenting what is exposed to public view and using records that have been gathered through third parties. So by the combination of that public observation doctrine and the third party doctrine, law enforcement is absolutely at its discretion right now to deploy and use real-time facial recognition surveillance systems and document everywhere you go, every building you walk into, every street you walk down, using your face as the primary biometric marker. And that's one of the principal dystopian fears that a lot of us are concerned about who work in this area and is also at the front of this Georgetown report.
Well, and of course, as you know, I mean, Baltimore residents learned in August that more than 300 hours of surveillance footage had been captured by planes flying over the city by a private entity that had an agreement with the police department, and the public did not know If the public isn't aware of this kind of surveillance, how can they protest it?
This is a very good question that came up quite recently in Maryland in the context of those stingrays or cell site locators that were litigated in the Maryland Court of Special Appeals earlier this year. And those systems have been deployed for the better part of a decade, allowing law enforcement officers to locate telephones and therefore people who were carrying those phones. And it was entirely surreptitious, and it was actually protected by agreements with the Department of Justice, non-disclosure agreements. And so almost nobody knew that these technologies were being used to surveil and to locate people for the better part of a decade because it was kept secret. And so it's really the good work of investigative journalists and investigative think tanks like the privacy group at Georgetown that are exposing these technologies to the public and advancing a public conversation. And I think one of the real contributions of this report is that it in many ways gives up on the Fourth Amendment and suggests that the Fourth Amendment isn't really going to do anything here absent a radical change. Where we really ought to focus our attention is on legislative interventions. And so in the Maryland legislature this year, there have been a number of proposals to limit law enforcement's access to and use of surveillance technologies, including cell site locators. And this Georgetown report, I think, very helpfully calls for legislative intervention, and even more helpfully has a proposed bill that somebody who was of a mind to advance these kinds of public interests could modify for their states and propose in the state legislature. And so I think there's both a valuable public education going on in this report and also a really, really valuable contribution to the conversation about regulatory approaches.
We need to take a quick break. When On the Record continues, we'll continue this discussion with David Gray of the University of Maryland Law School about the impact of face recognition technology. I'm Sheila Cast. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. A new report from a Georgetown University think tank calls for limits on police use of a new technology that uses computer software to scan photos and help police identify suspects. The researchers said Maryland, and Baltimore in particular, is on the cutting edge of using this technology. Maryland's Secretary of the Department of Public Safety and Corrections, which operates the state's database, told the Baltimore Sun, quote, "We're using it aggressively because we pursue criminals aggressively. That's a priority for us." Close quote. A department spokesman noted the technology is a tool but does not meet the standard for evidence and is not replacing investigative work by law enforcement. I'm speaking with David Gray. He's a professor of law at the Francis King Carey School of Law at the University of Maryland. He teaches courses on criminal law, criminal procedure, evidence, and jurisprudence, and has a book coming out in a few months about the Fourth Amendment and surveillance. I want us to hear another point made by Alvaro Bedoya, head of the Center on Privacy and Technology at Georgetown Law, about facial recognition software.
This technology is powerful, but it is not neutral. It will have a disparate impact on people of color, particularly African Americans, yet the little testing that's been done on these systems suggests that they are less accurate on African Americans, women, and young people.
David Gray, what do you make of that? What risk does this pose?
We've seen recently a number of very, very useful public reports and are having some very useful public conversations about inaccuracy in existing law enforcement search and seizure practices. And one of the primary examples of that is stop and frisk practices, which were highlighted a couple of years ago in New York reports and have been highlighted most recently in the Department of Justice reports on the Baltimore City Police Department. And when you look at the numbers for stop and frisks, what's striking is first the very low return rates on stop and frisks. And so, for example, according to the Department of Justice report on Baltimore, only a 3.7% success rate for stop and frisks, which is extraordinarily low. But what's more disturbing about those reports is that they document a overrepresentation of minority groups and principally young Black and Hispanic men in the population of those who are stopped and frisked. So in Baltimore, upwards of 85%, similar numbers in New York. That's disturbing by itself. But when you dig in just a little deeper, you find out that if you compare the accuracy of stop and frisks among minority populations and stop and frisks among white or Caucasian populations, law enforcement officers are much better at identifying criminal activity in white populations than they are Black populations. And so not only are they stopping and frisking more young Black men, a higher proportion of those young Black men are demonstrably innocent of any crime at the time that they're stopped and frisked. And so this problem with racial disparities in terms of the accuracy of law enforcement search and seizure programs is endemic to law enforcement, unfortunately. And what's really surprising is that it carries over into this technological field as well.
Well, one thing that the study from the Center on Privacy and Technology at Georgetown pointed out is that from August 2011 to December 2015, the FBI face recognition unit ran about 200,000 searches and came up with likely matches only 4% of the time, which I think ties into what you were just saying. But it also raises the question, if matches are so difficult to come up with, why do we even need to worry about this tool?
I think that the response that the FBI would give is the same response that I'm going to give, which is that this technology is very young. And so it is going to get more accurate over time. And so therefore, its abilities to be part of the backbone of a technological surveillance state are going to become more and more frightening over time. But even if that didn't occur, imagine having a system that is that inaccurate deployed for real-time facial recognition from surveillance cameras. And imagine further that law enforcement officers are interested in identifying who was in the area of a burglary at a particular time. If it's returning at a low rate, that's one problem. But if it's returning inaccurate results, that's quite a different problem. Insofar as it may very well identify me as, for example, as a potential perpetrator of a crime that occurred in Boston last week. And so I wasn't in Boston last week. It's not going to be very hard for me to prove I wasn't in Boston last week. But it's law enforcement officers have got to spend a lot of time tracking that down. And those inaccurate returns on facial recognition software are going to nevertheless impose on me. Law enforcement officers are going to show up at my door. If they cite that as probable cause, I might even be arrested. And even though it might sort itself out eventually, the damage is frequently done once we've had that kind of law enforcement intervention. So whether it's not accurate or super accurate, there are significant privacy concerns that are at stake. It's just the nature of the concerns.
That's David Gray of the University of Maryland School of Law here on The Record on WYPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about face recognition technology used by police departments. You pointed to the possibility of some legislative fixes. I gather that you are looking more to legislatures to address this than court cases to solve this problem.
As you mentioned earlier, I'm about ready to publish a book with Cambridge University Press that proposes a new Fourth Amendment framework that would produce constitutional regulations for a lot of these technologies. And the core of that argument is a return to an originalist reading of the Fourth Amendment. So at the heart of the failure of the Fourth Amendment to protect us against a lot of these technologies is that very peculiar definition of search adopted by the court in Katz. And one of the primary arguments of my book is that we ought to define search the way that anybody who was reading the Fourth Amendment would have defined search in 1792 in very familiar terms of looking for or trying to find And so if law enforcement officers are looking for or trying to find persons using facial recognition software or surveillance cameras, that is a search for purposes of the Fourth Amendment. And moreover, it's a search of a person. That's what they're looking for. And so the Fourth Amendment ought to have something to say on a programmatic level to make sure that these technologies and the way that they're deployed and the way that they're used is reasonable.
Specifically, what would you like to see the Maryland legislature change?
So I would like to see the Maryland legislature limit the deployment of the program to make sure that the technology itself was sufficiently reliable, that there were access limitations to the technology so that any old officer couldn't just look into the program and search for somebody's face on the program, that there would have to be some threshold that would be met before access would be granted. For some cases, I think it would be appropriate that that limitation on access would be internal to a police department, so a designated supervisory official. For some cases, it probably wouldn't need to be a court order. And those kinds of protections are in the Georgetown legislation, which I'm delighted to see. And I'd also like to make sure that there's some accountability on the back end so that there's regular reporting on the deployment and use of these technologies, regular reporting on the accuracy of the programs to make sure that they are producing reasonable searches. And in the event that the data shows that they're not, then we would have to go back and rethink the program, rethink restraints on the program. So I don't think that what's called for here is an across-the-board solution like a warrant requirement, but rather a multimodal, multilateral set of restraints that limit law enforcement discretion, limit access to the program, limit the scope of the searches in terms of duration and place, and provide for real accountability to both to the people and to the courts in the use and deployment of these programs.
David Gray is a professor of law at the Francis King Carey School of Law at the University of Maryland. His forthcoming book is titled The Fourth Amendment in an Age of Surveillance. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been my pleasure.
This is On the Record. At our page at WYPR.org, we have a link to the study, The Perpetual Lineup, Unregulated Police Face Recognition in America, issued last week by the Center on Privacy and Technology at Georgetown Law. I'm Sheila Cass. Thanks for listening to On the Record. See you tomorrow.